Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Amazon's battle at battle-tested strategies. Biden's first campaign event, 100% union. And today on the show, the latest from the American Federation of Government Employees and the latest from the United Auto Workers. Welcome to the Wednesday, June 21st edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Well, today's show is all about organizing. We're going to start things off with David Kahn, who is the organizing director for the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org. And if you've been listening to the last couple of months on the show, we've been talking about what a bang-up job that union is doing on organizing. 1,747 new members joining in May of this year. The new influx of members marks the eighth consecutive month of growth. Got a comment here from Everett Kelly, national president of the American Federation of Government Employees, and this is what he said. May's impressive numbers are a testament to the tenacity of our members and the undeniable value of union solidarity. This growth was not by chance. It's the collective result of ongoing organizing efforts, unyielding dedication, and the spirit of unity among government employees. That's from Everett Kelly, national president of the American Federation of Government Employees. Well, David is going to tell us all what they are doing to increase those numbers. We had him on the show, my gosh, it had to be well over a year ago, talking about the strategy, especially with the new administration, a labor-friendly administration. And here's the latest example. Employees at the Millennium Challenge Corporation, MCC, an independent United States government international development agency, have voted to form a union with AFGE as their representative. The new local is preparing to start contract talks, but already has an early win on pay. The employees, they are economists, engineers, international development practitioners, procurement professionals, project managers, and others. They overwhelmingly voted to join a union, with over 90% of the ballots cast favoring unionizing. So they will be part of the newly charted Local 1444, which has about 200 people in the bargaining unit. Terry Fletcher is the local president. He said employees decided to form the union after the agency ignored concerns over the agency's new telework and remote work policy. Get this, during the pandemic, employees were allowed maximum telework and remote work flexibility. Now, if they wanted to work from home or come into the office, they could. The flexibility worked well for employees and supervisors, many of whom work with counterparts in countries with significant time differences. Places like Mongolia, which has a 12-hour time difference from D.C. Well, last summer, on a July 1st call, MCC leadership told employees they would be required to return to the office 50% of the time, essentially returning to the pre-pandemic policies. And 2 weeks later, about 150 staff signed a letter asking the agency to pause implementation until leadership addressed a list of concerns regarding that decision. For five months, the agency ignored the letter. Fletcher said people were frustrated, adding that in the immediate months after the decision, about 10% of the workforce said they would quit, and another 50% were considering resigning within the next 10, 12 months. Just an example of what's going on in the workplace. So David is going to talk about that and more, and of course, the future. Our second guest on the show today comes from the United Auto Workers, another proud sponsor of America's Workforce, and that would be Maida Rosenstein. Now, she is the Director of Organizing for UAW Local 2110. This is the Technical Office and Professional, or TOP, union. They are an amalgamated union with 30 contracts covering over 3,000 workers in universities, publishing, museums, law firms, other offices. They represent teachers, secretaries, administrators, editors, computer operators, librarians, museum curators, typesetters, and graphic artists, among many others. A little background on Maida. She was a university clerical worker at Columbia University and was part of the organizing campaign there in the mid-1980s. Well, after a long fight with the university for recognition, they won their union. Maida became a full-time organizer with the union and went on to be elected president of Local 2110. She bargained numerous contracts, led strikes and actions. She stepped down as president last year and now is focused primarily on organizing. In fact, she led the organizing of over 2,000 new workers into the local union in the last couple of years. So like I said, today's show, all about organizing, which is taken off in virtually every union right now. And now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Delivery drivers and dispatchers at Amazon's delivery service partner, Battle-Tested Strategies, are on strike. Now, this is the first strike by Amazon drivers in the country. In April, a little background here, we talked about this briefly, the BTS drivers, again, that's Battle-Tested Strategies, they organized a union with the Teamsters, Local 396. The company voluntarily recognized the drivers' union and negotiated a first contract, which includes higher wages, just cause provisions, paid holidays, protections from unsafe conditions, and prohibitions on discipline based solely on information collected by in-truck surveillance equipment. That's a big issue with the workers. However, Amazon refusing to come to the table. No surprise there. This despite the union's claims that it is, in fact, in complete control of BTS's operations. The Teamsters filed an unfair labor practice charge against Amazon back in May, alleging that retaliatory conduct against drivers, as well as outright refusing to bargain, were blatant violations of labor law. The charge states that although these drivers wear Amazon uniforms, drive Amazon trucks, identify themselves as Amazon employees, are continuously monitored and surveilled by Amazon managers, and receive their work assignments from Amazon. Amazon has attempted to legally separate itself from these employees through a sham delivery service partner. That's where BTS comes in. Well, Amazon drivers organized with the Teamsters over concerns for their safety in extreme temperatures, which on a normal basis exceed 100 degrees Fahrenheit during summers in California. The back of an Amazon van feels like an oven in the summer, said Cecilia Porter, a striking driver. I felt dizzy and dehydrated, but if I take a break, I'll get a call asking why I'm behind on deliveries. Another driver on strike, Raj Singh, previously told reporters about his experience with driving in heat. This is what he said. The vans we have, it's a big metal container. In the extreme heat, it can get upwards of 135 degrees in the van. You feel like you're getting cooked back there. Yeah. He said, I go through 10, maybe 12 bottles of water a day, and I urinate once. Now, just recently, the Teamsters won a tentative agreement with UPS guaranteeing improved heat protections and air conditioning in trucks. However, the protections that BTS drivers want in their contract, unfortunately, may not last long. On April 14th, around a week before the union went public on April 24th, Amazon moved to terminate BTS's contract. Both the Teamsters and BTS's owner, Jonathan Ervin, say this was, in fact, retaliatory conduct for unionization. Under any standard applied by the board, there's no question that Amazon is a single and or joint employer with the BTS. This is what the unfair labor practice charge. Finally, this means it is patently unlawful for Amazon to rid itself of these newly unionized employees. Just amazing. Just amazing what Amazon is doing to come down on workers who are close to dying on the job when you think about those heat conditions. My God. Hats off for the Teamsters for sticking up for their company here, BTS, battle-tested strategies. Boy, they're going through a battle right now, no doubt about that. You might have caught this over the weekend, but President Biden kicked off his 2024 campaign alongside union workers in the city of brotherly love. That would be Philadelphia. It was his first official re-election campaign event. Biden emphasized his role as the most pro-union president in American history. And he did this before 2,000 union members. First Lady Jill Biden also spoke at the rally. She was wearing a blue T-shirt with the National Education Association logo on it. Union leaders who participated in the event emphasized that the face of labor is changing. Randy Weingarten was there. Randy is a head of the American Federation of Teachers. And she noted that you think about labor as the dude with a cigar. Well, it's not just that. I'm sure there's still dudes with cigars, but there's lots and lots of other people in a multi-generational, multi-racial group of people that are unified all behind labor. She went on to say that President Biden and Vice President Harris are the most pro-labor, pro-public education leaders our country has seen in modern history. Joe and Kamala, said Randy, understand in their souls the challenges families face and how important it is to their dignity to earn a decent living and have a shot at owning a home or securing a retirement or affording college. They know union membership can be transformative. Randy Weingarten, head of the American Federation of Teachers, which represents 1.7 million public school teachers and school staff around the country. All right, quick break. When we come back, organizing at the American Federation of Government Employees. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-Union.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. Good wages, good benefits, ulagency.org. Let's go to Washington, D.C. right now. And welcome to the show, David Kahn, who is the organizing director for the American Federation of Government Employees, AFGE.org. He's been with the union for about 10 years, spent much of his life as a union activist and a labor lawyer. Before we talk about organizing, I was talking earlier about President Biden's campaign appearance, his first event in Philadelphia last week. And we should note that the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal employee union, representing 750,000 federal and D.C. government employees, also endorsed President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris for re-election next year after a nationwide telephone town hall and two national membership polls that showed Biden to be the members' overwhelming choice. AFGE's National Executive Council voted unanimously to endorse Biden for the 2024 election. Everett Kelly, their president, said during his first term, the president has proven himself to be the most labor-friendly president in our lifetime. David Kahn, I'm sure you have to agree with that. I mean, it's refreshing to have a pro-union president in the White House. I'd like to get your comments. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's been great. I think the thing I'd start with, and thanks for having me, it's a pleasure to be on again. The thing I'd start with is that, you know, we took a poll of the membership and asked of all the candidates that had expressed an interest in the presidency who they'd like to see us support, and as you mentioned, overwhelming support for Biden, which makes a ton of sense. We've seen executive orders and initiatives and policy changes from Biden doing whatever he can to promote the opportunity for folks to have a voice on the job as union members in the federal sector and support private and public sector cohorts. And it's been extraordinary. Things like the TSA pay raise, which we're organizing around now, have been extraordinary initiatives from the Biden presidency. And with policies and priorities like that, it's hard not to be excited about another term of a labor-friendly Biden.
Yeah, very labor-friendly. And, you know, a lot of people are saying he's more pro-union than FDR. And I did a little research on this, and I'll share that with you. FDR was not in favor of public sector unions. I don't know if you realize that, but he was saying, hey, you know what? They're in the government. You know, the government's going to treat them okay. I mean, I'm just paraphrasing things here, but he was not big on that where Biden is. I mean, he likes unions everywhere. So there is a difference. And obviously that puts him in the category as being the most pro-union president in our history. So something we should celebrate. Let's talk about organizing. May was a big month. And I remember the last time we had you on the show, there was a game plan, obviously, with Biden in the White House. Things were looking better. David, you got to tell me what you're doing here, because it's pretty remarkable. Maybe you can share with our listeners what's going on in the American Federation of Government Employees.
Well, thanks for asking. I'm pleased to say that May was the best month for growth that the American Federation of Government Employees has had in 8 years. And the key behind that has been, I'm pleased to say, a mobilized membership. We have had extraordinary growth over the past year, and that's a result of members talking to members. The foundation of our plan to grow has been having one-on-one conversations with members talking to each other and members of organizing committees talking to each other.
about the issues that folks care about so that they can get involved to resolve the issues that, that matter to them. We've talked a lot in our union about the difference between recruitment and organizing. And as we understand it, when you ask people to join a union because of the great benefits or because of the job protections, what you're doing is you're asking people to join as a transaction. They pay dues, and in return, the union protects them. And when you do that, you're not making a strong case that they need the union all the time, because I don't always need grievances and representation. I don't always need the benefits for, good dental insurance or savings on tires. And the union wouldn't always need me based on that explanation. But when you ask people what it is that they want to see improved about the job, when you talk to people about having a voice, about terms and conditions of employment, about being on an equal level at the table with the employer regarding all the things that happen on the job site and in the facility, people understand that. And people understand that that's a permanent thing. That's not temporary. You always want to have a voice. You always want to have power in the workplace. And the people are not only are more likely to join for those reasons, but they're more likely to stay. One of the things we found is in the past year, even though we lose 3,500 people to retirement and promotion every month, we've only lost about 500 people to dropping the union out of 715,000 bargaining unit employees to dropping. We've got most of the back because the reason people are joining is because they're joining to have a voice. That desire is never a desire that diminishes or goes away.
3,500 a month you're losing primarily to retirement and attrition? Is that the case?
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase of the silver tsunami, but that's how OPM described what was coming and a big part of the reality in the federal sector. It's an older workforce than a lot of other workforces. I believe, and I've slept since I've looked at this study, but I believe that about 35 to 40% of the federal workforce would be eligible to retire on any given day.
Uh-huh.
And so a lot of these positions are not high turnover positions. And if you think about food inspectors, you think about border patrol agents, you think about VA nurses and doctors. These are positions that people make a career out of, but a lot of the folks that are in them are eligible to retire. And so ultimately what winds up happening is every single local of our 941 locals in AFG has to be in a constant organizing model, understanding that they're recruiting, not because people are leaving the job to go elsewhere, but because folks that have been in the job for a long time. And so a part of what's happening as we develop this organizing model is that it's being woven into the fabric of what our representation and local culture looks like. And as people begin their careers in the federal service, they're doing it with an understanding of the importance of having a voice and the importance of being a member of the union.
So essentially, because of that silver tsunami, and I did hear that, I mean, it's prevalent right now, because of that, you have to fight just to keep your head above water right now. Obviously, you got new employees in, and you got to talk to those employees to join the union. But you're making progress, though. I mean, 3,500 a month. Yeah, 3,500 a month. Maybe you get 3,700, 4,000 in. So you got to keep moving in that direction. Talk to me about that conversation, and I've heard this from various members from your union on the show. When somebody comes in, do you give them, and obviously there's some people that do this better than others, let's be honest, do you give them a set of talking points to say, hey, this is why I'm in the union, and you need to be in the union too, because this is what you're going to get, A, B, C, and D. I mean, how does that work? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people right now that are saying, hey, I want to do what AFGE is doing. You follow me?
Absolutely. And it's so interesting that you asked it the way you did, because I would argue that what the organizing conversation looks like is the same no matter what sector you're in and no matter what industry you're in. Because the reason people join unions vary enormously. When I'm training our local leaders and our national leaders about how to have these organizing conversations, I go around the room and I say, look back to when you first got involved as a member and think about the reason that you joined. Think about the thing that you were trying to fix. And I asked, you know, maybe half a dozen people to go and talk about what it is. And the answers vary. I'll have one lady say, you know, when I joined, the parking lot outside our facility, I worked at night, was super unsafe, wasn't well lit, and I needed the agency to fix that. Somebody else says, you know, I felt like our vacation schedule was being administered in an unfair way, and the boss's fishing buddies always got to take Christmas off. Somebody else says that they were concerned about the career ladder. Everybody joins for a different reason. So when you look at what the organizing conversation is, it's about 80% listening and 20% talking, where the person who's doing the organizing says, tell me about what it is that you want to see fixed. Tell me about, and this is with existing employees. This is not new employees. We talked a little bit about new employee orientation, but I'll get to that in a second. But with existing employees, say, tell me about your job. Tell me about what you do. Tell me about what you want to see fixed. If you had a magic wand, you know, what would you do to change about the job? Have things gotten better or worse since you've been there now? And when people start talking, they realize there's some issue for that person, that employee, that they want to see fixed. They want to see improved. And, you know, it's not really possible to go to work every day with that grievance, that upset, that thing that's bringing you down at top of mind. But it lives in your belly, lives in your, and it's a constant irritant. You know, maybe it's the thing that makes your whatever your Sunday is, whether it's Sunday or not, your Sunday is a little bit grayer because you have to go back into the job. But the organizing job is to identify that issue and bring it to the forefront, polish it off, and show it to the worker and say, you've been pushing this down every day. This is a thing that you need to see fixed. You're telling me about how intolerable it makes your job, about how it affects your family, about how it affects your life. We're having this conversation now. So at the end of this conversation, you're going to make a decision. Either way, you're going to make a decision to continue living with it, to join your coworkers, and to try to fix it. You know, so what decision do you want to make? And the understanding at the end of this conversation is that being a union member is not a passive decision. It's an active decision. You're involved. You're having a voice. You're making a change. And when people understand, when people are looking at the thing they want to see fixed, they can't say no to having a voice. They can't say no to getting involved. And then at that point, the organizing conversation becomes an activism conversation. It becomes an engagement conversation. It's not just about joining. It's about how people can get plugged in and begin addressing the thing they care about. And what's exciting about that is it doesn't just make the union stronger from a membership perspective, just based on pure numbers. It means you have more people that have their, you know, shoulder to the wheel and are pushing, and it makes you stronger for representation, makes you stronger for mobilization, makes you stronger when it comes to legislative initiatives, because everybody cares about something different, and everybody that you talk to and have that conversation with is going to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversation winds up having the format of listening to the issue that the person cares about and presenting it to them as a decision about how to fix it. And that's true in the federal sector, that's true in the public sector, that's true in the private sector. Whether you're talking to people in healthcare, construction, the hospitality industry, the conversation is the same for absolutely everybody. And we represent 70 agencies. We represent people that ride horses at the border. We represent people that are nuclear scientists. We represent people that inspect poultry. We represent almost any job you can imagine, from law enforcement to deep sea divers. And the conversation winds up being about what each individual federal worker wants to see changed in the workplace and how they can get involved as a member to address it.
Great advice from the Director of Organizing at the American Federation of Government Employees. 80% listening, 20% talking. Remember that. We're going to continue with David Kahn. Later in the show, we're going to check in with Maida Rosenstein. She is the Director of Organizing at UAW Local 2110. Back in a few minutes, you're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org. You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. By the way, this next portion of the show, sponsored by iMed, switching to managed vision care may save your fund money and deliver a better experience. So here's what you do. Go to imed.com/union, and you will learn a whole lot more. I'll tell you, I'm learning a whole lot on the show today. From David Kahn, who is the Director of Organizing at the American Federation of Government Employees, and I'll tell you, they had a bang-up May, best May in years, and the problem is there's a lot of retirements. We talked about the silver tsunami. 3,500 people, government employees, are leaving every month, so they got to fight hard to get the new workers there and make sure they're going with the American Federation of Government Employees. David, I saw this story on the website, Millennium Challenge Corporation, and this was one of your locals, 1444, and this is an independent government international development agency, and you to your point, you know, everybody's got different issues. In this case, it was telework, because they deal. These are procurement professionals, project managers, I mean, economists, engineers, you name it. They deal with countries around the entire world. So, okay, you're working 9 to 5, and you're dealing, the article points out, dealing with somebody in Mongolia. Well, guess what? There's a 12-hour time difference. We can't do that during 9 to 5. We got to be flexible here. Can you speak to that? Because the telework, you know, during the pandemic, I know there was a tug of war going on with that. But can you speak to that as one of the issues that need to be worked out with the union?
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up that particular campaign. One of the initiatives that we've had is to empower our locals and our districts to begin doing organizing on their own so that we can teach people. And, you know, that's what unions are all about, is empowering every individual to have the power to do all the things that the union does to engage in these organizing campaigns. So I'd like to give special recognition to the local and to District 14 for that effort. Not without our support, of course. We lended a hand, but it was their initiative that made a difference. And you're right to say that it hinges on telework. One of the things that's really interesting is in the federal government, we have something called the Telework Enhancement Act of 2010 that says that every agency has an obligation not just to have as robust a telework plan as possible to decrease the footprint of the federal government in regards to the space that they're paying for, but to increase productivity and to have a plan to expand it year after year. And so during the previous administration under Trump, many agencies didn't abide by that. And as different agencies were looking at what returning to the facilities would look like during the return to work after the pandemic had abated, they've had a lot of questions about what that means. And the answer is, as we understand it, and this is one of the reasons you want to have a union, 715,000 federal workers and the staff that supports them by your side, we understand that if your productivity as an agency has increased or hasn't diminished under expanded telework, there's no reason to shrink that. And if your work speaks to it in the way that the Millennium Challenge Corporation does, it's something you got to have. So we were able to talk to folks, find out the issues that matter to them, and when it's telework, be able to assure not only that there's a great argument to be made at the bargaining table and if need be in the courts about preserving it, but that's a bargaining issue. It's an issue that workers have a voice in. And that campaign also was an opportunity to do something we've been doing a lot of lately, which is organizing remote workers and telework workers. A lot of times we talk to people who are in the work site or talk to people in the facilities. But in this case, we're talking to folks who are working remotely. And we've done a lot as organizers to figure out excellent tools and resources to do that, whether it be phone centers, visiting people at their homes, sending people direct texts, and most importantly, having coworkers talk to each other. Hello? And my daughter would like to say hello to some of the union folks on the on the show, if you don't mind.
Hi.
Okay. And how old is she?
7 years old.
7 years old. Okay. God bless her.
I talk about folks having a voice. I'd include her, of course.
There you go. Start them young. Union voice. Get them going there. I love
exactly.
That. We're speaking with David Kahn, who is the Director of Organizing for the American Federation of Government Employees. And to your point on the Millennium Challenge Corporation, it seems to me that everybody's got a breaking point. In that case, I was reading the story, which is posted on the website, afge.org. The 10% of the workforce said that they were going to quit if they didn't, get their demands. Another 50% were considering resigning within the next year. And I'm hearing horror stories coming out of Amazon. I mean, you're hearing about worker unrest. The Teamsters are upset at UPS because they didn't get. And now if they say they're going to walk and they're already threatening to do that, that's getting the company's attention. Have you noticed we're seeing a lot of that right now, David, as director of organizing? There's a bit of unrest and people are being probably a little more vocal than in years past. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think there's a couple of factors. I think one is in recent years, we've seen high profile, effective workplace actions around the country. We saw teacher strikes in deep red states work. We've seen enormous organizing campaigns in sectors that are traditionally not densely organized be effective. And we've seen people begin to understand that labor is a powerful force in coming on the heels of, I'd say, decades where that hasn't been what has been understood to be the case. And on top of that, we had the pandemic where folks who were, essential workers were out grinding and seeing that, bosses didn't sufficiently value them and their contribution. And so there's a cultural reckoning with the inequity between management and workers that everybody's party to. And it's exciting to get to be a part of the organizing effort and help bring people into the movement and give them a voice. And it's, as you said, it's Amazon, it's the federal sector, I'm sure it's UAW, as you mentioned. It's very exciting. And if I can, I would say AFGE was thrilled to send a dozen organizers to assist with the organizing campaign in Bessemer. Because when I described the initiative, and I'm sure anybody else would, it's something that's going on across the House of Labor, and we're all pleased to be a part of it. And the American Federation of Government Employees realizes that it stands shoulder to shoulder with dozens of other unions in making a difference in the lives of American workers.
We're all in this boat together. All right, my brother, you take care. Thank you. I'll let you get back to your daughter there. It sounds like she's got a couple of demands on you. So you take care of her.
Yeah, she's well. You know, we raise them vocal.
I love that. Okay, my brother, you take care. Let's talk down the road. Keep doing what you're doing, okay?
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
David Kahn, Director of Organizing for the American Federation of Government Employees. We're going to take a quick break. Maida Rosenstein is Director of Organizing at UAW Local 2110, and she is coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you could find more at teamster.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. We had Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT, on the show yesterday. You can check that show out at awfpodcast.com. There's a link to a YouTube video there about what they're doing because of a grant from the American Federation of Teachers, what they're doing in New Lexington, Ohio, to get young people involved in the trades. In fact, they got a partnership with the IBEW in New Lexington. Good stuff there. You might want to check that video out. Right now, let's go to New York City. Check out the UAW. This would be Local 2110. We have the Director of Organizing on our live line right now. That would be Maida Rosenstein. Maida was a university clerical worker at Columbia University, part of an organizing campaign there going back to the mid-1980s. I guess that's when you got the bug in you, right, Maida? Maybe you can pick it up from there. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was a very it took many years for us to organize at Columbia. It was really challenging. The university opposed it, and I learned a tremendous amount. And I was really inspired, especially as a young woman, by, you know, the idea that so few women workers were actually organized, and that things that were taken for granted for the mostly male workforce at Columbia, who worked in maintenance and security, you know, the expectation that they would have union rights did not apply when it came to the mostly female clerical workers. And so that really took hold of me, and I joined the organizing committee, and lucky enough to be mentored by some really incredible women who led the campaign. And we, you know, we came up against every challenge with the university. They ran an anti-union campaign and ultimately won recognition, went on strike, and became a full-time union organizer.
Well, I've noticed that the UAW has been on a roll here, especially with the number of museums. Maybe you could speak. Well, and not only that, there was a strike recently, well, 2 months long. Hispanic Society workers. Let's start over there. What happened in that situation?
Well, First of all, you're right about the role of organizing in museums, and that's really, there's been a huge uptick of organizing by museum workers. We thought that the pandemic would slow it down, but if anything, you know, I think it spurred people on even more. And, you know, sort of a like a hidden secret of museums that are thought of as being, you know, great institutions is that many of them rely heavily on very low paid labor, contingent labor, precarious situations. So we've organized many museums, including the Hispanic Society of America, which is a small museum on the Upper West Side, Harlem, that has existed for many, many years, that actually has an incredible collection, including some real masterpieces. But unfortunately, had been closed by its board of trustees for renovations. And, back in 2017, pre-pandemic, but they didn't raise the money to renovate it and downsized their staff. And then I think the trigger was they actually froze the pension plan and for very long-term dedicated workers, professionals who, you know, cared for the collection, et cetera, and people eventually decided to unionize. This wasn't just a bunch of young people. It was actually people who had substantial careers at the Hispanic Society, curators, librarians, conservators, educators, maintenance workers, and they had been worked at the society for years, and were finally concluded that they had no choice but to try to unionize. So they did, and won an election overwhelmingly, despite the Hispanic Society conducting an anti-union campaign, retaining outside counsel, and trying to, conduct a campaign based on, misleading issues and sometimes lies. People voted overwhelmingly for the union despite this. And we went into negotiations to try to address these conditions. We bargained really hard for a year and a half, but ultimately the society made a final offer in which they demanded cuts in the health benefits. And our members just weren't having this because, after having experienced a cut in their retirement benefits, they said, well, we have a union now, we're drawing the line. And they went on strike and they won. It was a hard strike. It lasted 8 weeks. It's a small group of workers, but they were valiant and courageous and stood their ground.
Did they have to close the museum while the strike was going on?
Well, interestingly, the museum was semi-closed anyway because of the renovations. But what happened, they had planned openings, like opening events to reopen for an exhibit that they have on now. And they couldn't carry out any of the opening events. So essentially, we stopped them dead by doing this. So it was, while it was difficult for the workers who were on strike, we sort of made it hell for the Hispanic Society as well.
Maida, it sounds to me that you mentioned the fundraise. It sounds like they didn't raise enough funds for the renovation, and in return, they took it out on the workers. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, I think that's exactly true. I mean, it was a struggle for them to raise money, and they wanted to therefore cut back on the cost for the workers. But the workforce is very small to begin with because they imposed reductions pre-unionization. And it made no sense because this is the small, very dedicated, long-term people who care for this very valuable collection and who have kept the institution alive during a period when the museum was just dark.
Right.
I think showed a lack of sort of appreciation and understanding of what they had in this workforce. People who work at the Hispanic Society do so because they love the museum and they love the collection and they love and want to bring the collection and programs and exhibitions forward into a community that is not known for its, where there are not a lot of art museums. And so these are people who really care deeply about the work that they do mm-hmm. and want to continue doing it.
Well, Maida, I have to salute the UAW here. And there's a number of unions that have gone in different directions. The steelworkers, for one, they've done a great job in the healthcare sector. But the UAW, okay, people that build cars. Well, guess what? A lot of those jobs have not come back from overseas, and as a result, they got to go elsewhere. So we're talking about museums. We're talking about college campuses, and you've been very, very successful in that. So my hat is off to you and everybody in the UAW, and we're focusing today on Local 2110. Did I hear you say before we started recording that, and I guess we need some updating here, you're close to, what, 5,000 workers now in your territory?
Yeah, because there's been so much successful organizing, has been able to expand. And it's been very challenging, obviously, but it's also been very invigorating for our membership to have grown in this way. And I have to say, I really want to thank the membership of Local 2110 for all of their support for organizing and for understanding that it's important to organize new workers into our union and fight for fair contracts and justice, for all of these workers.
Well, Maida, as you know, this is a very difficult job when it comes to organizing. The good news is we've got a union-friendly administration there. We got a union-friendly NLRB. So obviously, with a climate like that, you got to take advantage of that. You don't know how long it's going to last. Hopefully, it's going to last a lot longer. It's going to go for maybe another 5 years here. We'll see what happens. But that's where elections really matter. We got to get the right people in office to make sure that that climate will continue. So keep doing what you're doing. Anything you want to call attention to? Is there another museum here that you got your sights on?
Well, we are actually organizing. I mean, as I said, we've organized probably 15 museums in the last few years. And, it's always a challenge to go into bargaining in a first contract. We're proud of what we've accomplished at several of these other museums, the Whitney and the MFA in Boston, where we've gotten great first contracts. We're still facing a hard way at the Brooklyn Museum and at the Guggenheim. We hope that we will reach agreements with those two institutions soon.
Very good. Maida Rosenstein, Director of Organizing, UAW Local 2110. Check out their Facebook page, Local 2110 UAW. Take care, stay strong, stay safe, stay in touch, okay?
Thank you.
All right, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, Bill Samuel of the AFL-CIO. That and more. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.